Moncrief on News Talk.
What did you do?
I don't want to go. All I want is Jenny. I love her.
She's a servant.
Not at my heart.
That's not how it works. That's not how a single thing works.
Well, it should be.
Are you five? No. You will go to France, George.
If you make me go, I will kill myself. But this time, I will make sure...
Fall in a way that breaks your neck.
So that's why you left me to hang.
I left you because it was staged. You were play acting.
It was real, I promise you. You just want to send me off to France to learn the ways of refinement and then return to marry some awful rich wife and milk her dowry.
It's about more than that.
No, it's not.
I never beat you.
Father has enough times. Why don't you?
Mother, don't hurt him.
I won't. Think of John, eldest and heir. Who will marry him? How can we build a pass on anything unless we use your gifts?
What gifts?
If I were a man and I looked like you, I'd rule the planet.
That's Mary and George. You can stream episodes on Sky Atlantic and Now TV. James Dempsey joins us once again. Afternoon, James.
Afternoon, Sean.
So what marks us out as being this costume drama as being different from all the other costume dramas?
It's very gay. That's what I'll start with, right? So it is, I think, loosely inspired by somewhat credible facts, but stretched fairly thin, I would say. It's based on a novel called The King's Assassin by a writer named Benjamin Woolley. And it is about King James I of England, who I think was James VI, perhaps, of Scotland, and his Jacobean era of 20 years or so. And into that comes Julianne Moore, with a kind of what I would say a generally okay but bit so-so English accent, but really excellent arch delivery as Mary Villiers. And she is Villiers by name and like a villain by nature. And basically she is a conniving, scheming woman who will get her children up the echelons of power any which way she can, including sending her second son and best hope for a useful marriage, because he's very handsome, off to Paris, or off to France rather, to learn the ways of seduction in the sexiest boarding school that has ever been committed to the screen. And he's played by Nicholas Galitzine, who is actually no stranger to this kind of material. He's, you know, a young British actor, but he has definitely made a name for himself playing a number of queer characters, including kind of his debut, which was in the Irish film Handsome Devil a good few years ago. But recently it was seen in Red, White and Royal Blue, and I really mean seen. And into that we get this kind of attempt by them to curry favour with King James. He's played by Tony Curran, the Scottish actor, and rise their way up through the court. And what I really liked about this was it is camp. I mean, it absolutely understands exactly what it is. It is a trashy soap opera with bodices to be ripped, and it rips them akimbo. And I mean, the sex scenes are frequent, and I mean, they serve the plot insofar as it is all about seduction. But what is really the selling point here is the dialogue. So it's written by a creator named DC Moore. He's best known for writing episodes of Killing Eve, and he has just a great grasp on witty, funny, scathing, mean dialogue that is, you know, like these mows are bombs, right? And like, it is just like, I found myself cackling through it sometimes, that particularly Julianne Moore gets served all of these brilliant one-liners. Like, I really thought in all the kind of courtly intrigue and backstabbing, it was very much, you know, like Jennifer Coolidge on the boat in The White Lotus, except it's like, these gays yonder are trying to murder me. And it really is all that kind of stuff. Like, it is all it's all about gaining the upper hand and being clever in your statecraft, despite the fact that Mary Villiers comes from, you know, not great stock. She has risen, she's found a way onto the bottom of the ladder, and she's insistent on climbing all the way to the top. Now, the whole thing runs for 7 episodes, and I did feel it slightly ran out of steam by the end. The end felt kind of rushed, and then the kind of coda, if that's what I'll say, felt really just tacked on. But the first kind of half of the season is absolutely I found it just so enjoyable to watch. It was like a really rompy soap opera that knew what it was and delivered on what it could be.
Okay, well, you can't say much fairer than that. Is it a bit like Bridgerton in that people speak in contemporary English and, you know, they're playing Kanye in the background and that kind of thing?
So at least in Bridgerton, they kind of play instrumental Kanye in the background. Here, the music is all very kind of modern. I mean, there are bits where they're sort of dancing to courtly music. But by and large, the soundtrack, I can't remember if it's diegetic or non-diegetic. Anyway, the music that they can't hear is very, very modern. And even the filming style is very, like, I think it was shot on digital, and it looks like that. It looks kind of crisp and modern, although obviously the costumes are beautifully tailored and very, like, sumptuous in their design. I read a few criticism that it was, like, a bit dark in the sense of not an awful lot of light. And that is true for bits of it, but I didn't find it particularly overwhelming for me. But all in, the dialogue is definitely anachronistic and totally and utterly apocryphal. People are, look, you know, I guess what kind of is intriguing about it is there are many gay characters on screen, or queer characters, I'll say, because, I mean, even Julianne Moore befriends Niamh Alger, a woman of the night, Irish actress Niamh Alger, who's Sandy, who is a local prostitute who gives her a few tips and then becomes her own confidant throughout the season. And there's actually great supporting roles by Irish actors across the board, Niamh Alger in particular, but I've got to hand it to Mark O'Halloran, who I'd know from Adam and Paul? God, it was about 20 years ago at this point. He plays Francis Bacon, who is also a conniving member of the court as well, with great delivery of his scathing one-liners as well. So perhaps the dialogue is perhaps too modern and too, too contemporary sounding. But honestly, I just enjoyed the ride so much that I just thought it was a really fun camp show.
Yeah, and I don't think for that kind of show, people are looking for historical accuracy particularly. It's not about that at all.
Not really, no. Like, what you're looking for here is good actors delivering pithy dialogue. And like, even the very first scene of the show is Julianne Moore delivering her second born, George, the kind of guy, the son she is putting all of her faith and all of her hopes into the future for, in the most kind of weird, creepy way as well, right? But like, even in the first scene, the midwives helping deliver him immediately drop him on the floor, and there's one-liners coming out about that. Like, I thought what they understood here was tone perfectly. Like, what I also really respected was, you know, Julianne Moore is this conniving, motherly type, but she has her limitations as well, as in, you know, their plan, like, it doesn't all go to plan. It's not all just immediately working out and figuring it out and playing 3D chess, you know, 10 moves in advance. It's a lot of making it up on the fly and trying to figure it out and using the skills she has to get to her ends. And like, I found that honestly just very, very, very compelling viewing. Right. And by the seventh episode, yeah, it did, you know, it all just sort of happens, and then it doesn't seem to have anywhere else left to go. And that's a bit of a disappointment, but if you can overlook a kind of so-so ending, the rest is really, really strong.
Right. And is the entire series available to stream now?
The entire series, yeah, on Sky Atlantic.
All right. Okay, we'll move on to our second show. It is The Push, Murder on the Cliff. Here's a clip.
Hey, we're up on Arthur's Seat near the very top of it. We heard someone screaming, and there's a guy here. He said his wife had fallen off of the edge, I think.
Right, what part of Arthur's Seat do the officers know?
The more vertical side.
Are you able to approach the vehicle?
Hey buddy, I'm on the phone with the emergency services. She's on the other side, yeah? Oh, you okay, buddy?
What the f*** is that? Ouch. So, do we need an ambulance,
Wayne? Do you need an ambulance, you think? Yeah, 100%, that's what I thought.
Right, listen, I'll get someone there as soon as we can, okay?
Yeah, no problem.
Thank you.
Right, so funny enough, the last time I think Arthur's Seat was mentioned here was in one day where they go for a climb up there. I think it's there they go, but this is far darker altogether.
Yeah, this is a really, really sad documentary, and like, I, you know... I'm on the one hand, I'm sort of reluctant to recommend something so challenging to watch, because it is a very, very dark and very upsetting story, and one about coercive control and domestic violence. So, you know, to sort of know that going in. It's a true crime documentary, and it's about the death, and I should say, well, it's about the death of Fawzia Javid, who was a young lawyer, I think she was about 31, solicitor from Bradford, who married her husband, Kashif Anwar. And 4 months later, as we heard in the clip there, a phone call is being made to the emergency services in Edinburgh saying that she has fallen off the top of the cliff. And what we're watching in the program, it's two episodes, they run for slightly longer than an hour each, is the murder trial that Kashif Anwar is on, because he has been arrested for pushing her off the cliff, although he contends that he slipped and was trying to catch her and then she then fell off the cliff. And what we're watching is basically the murder trial as it is happening. Now, in Scotland, you're allowed to go in and film murder trials. And I don't know if he gets any say in whether he was included in this, but definitely the director of this, Anna Hall, is a very gifted documentarian. She made a documentary called Catching a Killer and Libby, Are You Home Yet?, for which she won the BAFTA a few years ago. So she's very versed in this kind of milieu of, unfortunately, crimes that happen against women. And to this, she brings a great sensitivity and really managed to get Fawzia's parents involved. Her mother, Yasmin, is like a regular talking head throughout the entire show and is going into great detail about how the loss of her only child, who was also pregnant at the time, was incredibly overwhelming for her, and what it's like to be the parent of a victim going through the murder trial, giving evidence, watching it from afar, having to hold your bite your tongue and all that kind of thing. It also is like, it really kind of brought to mind to me Making a Murderer, you know, which obviously was this like big behemoth months or years ago at this point, but was a lot about kind of trial and how a murder trial works and how you piece together evidence. And to that you get a lot here, because both the defending counsel and the prosecutor are interviewed throughout the process and explain the decisions that they make and why they've made them. And it's really just very fascinating to watch kind of the legal technicalities of the trial taking place while also being told this very, very, very tragic backstory of a love that soured very rapidly and ended in Fawzia's death. And all in, like, I really just admired it for how sensitively handled the material is. I mean, this could be very lurid stuff, and it absolutely isn't. It is treated with the absolute dignity and respect that it deserves. But also, it's a very challenging documentary because you, as the audience, are sort of playing the role of the jury as well, right? As in, ultimately, we are, you know, like members of the jury, we're listening to the evidence. We have to make up our mind, but we weren't there. So we ultimately don't know if he pushed her or not. We can only weigh it up on the balance of facts. And the defense makes a very strong defense for why, you know, he's not guilty of murder. And I found myself watching there, admiring while also hating this guy at the same time, but admiring the defense that that his lawyer is putting up to get him off the murder charge. Mm. I won't go into details of what the outcome of the trial is, because it is sort of the big finale of the second episode. But all in, it's a truly fascinating but bitterly sad documentary about domestic violence, about coercive control, and about kind of the lengths that people will go to.
Yeah, now I suppose people can just Google it and know how this case finished. But it sounds anyway, James, that maybe that's not that important, and that this is more about the entire process.
It's about the process, and it's about how you, like, how families move on or don't move on, really, after the sudden death of their loved ones. And what's really actually intriguing about it is, even perhaps 10 years ago, this kind of documentary wouldn't have been as rich, because Fawzia herself was sort of documenting all of this material against her husband. So you have her as a lawyer sort of piecing together different evidence as she begins to admit that he's being domestically abusive. You have like body cam footage of a police officer who comes to talk to her. You have recordings of all the phone calls that are very deftly weaved in visually into the story. Like, in addition to just being a very sad but interesting story, it's also just a very technically well-made documentary, because how they piece together all of the footage that they have from multiple different forms just makes it a very rich and sort of lived-in document.
Yeah. Right, we'll move on to our third show. It is Extraordinary. The second season is now available to stream on Disney+. Here's a clip.
Are you still stalking Nora?
She's 150,000 followers.
Wait, what?
She's simply life well lived.
Oh, Jesus, you don't follow her, do you?
I find her non-threateningly aspirational.
Not anymore, though. Your true friend.
Just don't spend all night going down the rabbit hole. That way madness lies.
I won't.
Oh, good, you're awake. She said she went to Mykonos for the first time last year and found it charming. But in this photo, taken 3 years prior, you can clearly see a Mykonos magnet on her fridge. Now, I know what you're thinking. Someone else brought her a souvenir from Mykonos. But I went through all of her friends and family and co-workers' profiles, and none of them have ever been to Mykonos. Her friend Hayley from Sixth Form Netball, they went for a coffee in Gales and Sevenoaks 6 years ago, but they're not close. She went to Santorini with her family in 2012. And you want me to believe that you would, or even could, buy a Mykonos fridge magnet at Santorini? It doesn't make any economic sense!
Okay.
Right, so I really like the first season of this, in you know, just the basic conceit of she doesn't have any superpowers and everybody has one. So it's kind of more like an ordinary humdrum kind of thing rather than people are running around in their underpants zapping aliens.
Yeah. Yeah, the way I kind of liken it is it's like The Boys meets Sex Education, right? Yes. Like, as in, it has people who are flawed and have superpowers, and some of them use them for good and some of them use them for bad, not quite to the nihilistic way that The Boys does. And then it's got that kind of, like, it's got that absolute visual kind of panache of Sex Education in terms of costuming and set design and music cues and all that kind of stuff. So it's a really, I've got to hand it to its creator, a Fermanagh woman named Emma Moran. She's a young writer, and now she's like really someone to watch because this is, I think, very popular on Disney Plus all over the world. She started creating the show first as sort of like a kind of a housemate, house share drama as part of her master's when she was studying at Manchester University. And during the pandemic, the idea came to her to maybe throw in this idea of superpowers. And what it really is, above all else, is a star-making turn for this Irish actress, Mairead Tyers, who plays Jen, who has a really good sense of both physical and like vocal comedy. She can sell the lines really, really well. She understands, like, she just understands Jen completely. And as you said, Jen is this woman living in a world where everyone has superpowers, where she doesn't. At the end of the first season, she had sort of gathered enough money to go to therapy, essentially. And this season two follows her into that therapy session. Her therapist is played by Julian Barrett, probably best known from The Mighty Boosh, and he takes her literally inside her mind where she's trying to unpack her various traumas and figure out why her powers haven't yet materialized. What I really liked about the second season is the rest of the characters get fleshed out much, much more, particularly Sophia Oxenham as Carrie, her kind of best friend who's able to channel the dead, and Bilal Hanza as Cash, her now dumped boyfriend who can kind of manipulate time. My only criticism of it is that in its very short run, there's only 8 episodes, they're only half an hour each, that sometimes they kind of ignore the plot to do a sort of episode of the week event kind of things. And because it is so short, I'd almost just rather it was a bit more sticking to the general plot to move things along there a bit faster. But I'm not going to lie, I think I watched the whole thing in like about 2 sittings and I just lapped it up because even at its weakest, it's still very funny. And Mairead Tyers is just really able to sell the material that we've got here. And the world that they inhabit is this kind of lo-fi superhero cosmic world where you never quite know what you're going to see flying in the background or what like silly power is going to materialize or how the characters are going to going to deploy it at any given point. And that makes it a very kind of joy to watch because you just, there's always something happening, always to catch your attention.
Yeah, indeed. And Ardlo Hanlon is, so he's still there even though he's dead.
but conveniently her flatmate is able to channel the dead, so he appears as a voice.
Yes, indeed, and Jizzlord as well. It wouldn't be the same without him. Those three shows are Mary and George. You can stream all the episodes on Sky Atlantic and Now TV. The Push, Murder on the Cliff, you can catch up with that on All 4, and Extraordinary, you can stream all of season 1 and 2 on Disney Plus. James Dempsey, thanks a million.
Thank you.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.